Welcome. You're listening to the Evolvepreneur Secret Show for Entrepreneurs, and I'm your host, Brian Silverthorne. And it's always my mission to help entrepreneurs make a difference in their businesses and to also navigate the challenging worlds of growth and startup or relaunch. So today we're going to dig deep with our special guest and get you the best concepts and strategies to fast track your business. And today's special guest is Noah Healy, and Noah is a market designer and game theorist working on better economic systems. So he is more fully capable to explain that than I am. So we'll do that during the show. Welcome, Noah. Happy to have you on the broadcast.
Thank you, Brian. I'm happy to be here.
Good. So a market designer and game theorist. So those two leave me stumped, not because they're not important and probably common, just because of my background and experience. So can you tell us a little bit about what you got to this position and what your current focus is?
Absolutely. And I'll correct you just slightly. Unfortunately, they're not common. We've been running as a species on roughly the same primary market design since the Renaissance. So game theory was developed by poker players at Los Alamos during the Manhattan Project in order to figure out the mathematics of strategy. And it evolved into a number of different pieces. And one of them is sort of the famous Nash equilibrium, which became very important in economics. What I've been able to contribute to that is the discovery of a way to link computer programming with strategic situations in order to create entirely new kinds of marketplaces where the computer can have a mediative role that doesn't have the kind of interests that a person would have, and can demonstrate that it's behaving fairly in a way that a human would not be able to demonstrate. And as a result of that, create marketplaces that cost less to operate and have less noise or deception built into them.
Man, that sounds interesting. Can you give me like a real world example of that from, you know, kind of start to finish?
So my basic concept is that at a simple level, you'll have marketplaces like commodity marketplaces where you have a group of producers, say wheat farmers around the world, and a group of consumers, you know, flour makers, you know, bread makers, those sorts of people. And these two groups need to connect up with each other. But the difficulty that they encounter is that there's hundreds of thousands of people in the first group and tens of thousands of people in the second group. And so if they were going to competitively maintain these connections across themselves, they would each need to be managing a client pool of either tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. And that would take so much time away from their business that their business wouldn't be competitive anymore. So what happens instead is these sort of central clearinghouses take over. And so for wheat, for example, the primary global marketplace is hosted in Chicago. Then there are other local marketplaces at sort of continent scale areas. So China has its own wheat pit and so on. So what would happen is they would go in, they'd see, you know, everyone's seeing this sort of stock tickers go up and down. They'd see that sort of wildly fluctuating price. They'll hedge. They'll take a deal that's probably on average not as good as they'd be able to get, but they at least know how much they're going to be getting. That's something that they can take to their bank and, you know, have an assurance of what the future is going to hold. And that market basically matched them up with some deep-pocketed middleman that effectively was selling them price insurance. And that's how things work today. What I envisage is a switch up to that, where instead of getting an individual deal with the marketplace, you're signing up to see what sort of collective deals the market is cutting. And people, rather than sort of picking off single insurance policies, are forecasting what the joint clearance prices of these group trading situations are going to be into the future. And this creates a scenario where effectively everyone from both sides of the trades can pre-negotiate the future course of pricing and then all take advantage of these negotiated prices. And because it's essentially a negotiation for an idealized fair price versus this sort of insurance of the worst deal that you can accept, on average, the deals that you get are significantly better.
Well, that clears it up. Thank you very much for that. That was a great explanation. Will this thing be a competitor of like the commodities market, or will it help enhance the commodities market?
Initially, it's an enhancement because these marketplaces are very expensive to operate. And so they're really only economical for things like wheat and oil and, you know, steel and things like that, where the amount of traded material and the number of people involved in these trades is so large that it's worth the costs, which are also considerable. However, there are other materials which are close, but not quite that big a deal. So people have heard about lithium and cobalt for batteries. Those are not exchange traded because until fairly recently, they weren't that economically important. Mm-hmm. Things like sweet corn or popcorn aren't exchange traded directly, because field corn is so dominant in that area that essentially field corn trades everything. And then there's just a sort of bonus that's tacked on to the field corn price for these smaller areas. So being able to create marketplaces to directly service these sort of sideline commodities creates a lot of opportunity, because whenever there's a concept known as commoditizing your complements. If your business produces something and that something is useful in association with other things, if those other things are commodities, you're better off, because your clients will very easily be able to get the synergies that would make your thing even better. So what you would like is a situation where all of your complements are commoditized. So by expanding out the number of things that can be commoditized, the existing commodity markets benefit. However, long-term, once it's demonstrated that these markets work and work more effectively than the existing markets, I'd expect transition to occur fairly reasonably, since the clients are certainly going to be clamoring for having, you know, a lot bigger take homes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I noticed you do some consulting around this. Is your client from both sides of this transaction, or just one side, and what do they look like?
So at this point, I'm mainly consulting with operators. So it's actually somebody that is trying to provide this institutional support to these different groups. The possibility of launching a marketplace from one side is actually something that is potentially very interesting. Many countries suffer from the fact that marketplaces have this kind of natural winner-take-all character. And so consequently, New York, Chicago, and London have most of the prime markets on Earth. And so other countries, even other highly successful countries like Japan and China and France and Germany, effectively have to outsource their price discovery to foreign nations, and they pay money to do so. So the possibility of having your own marketplaces is valuable there, but some nations are primary exporters, and so it's sort of an even worse fate if you grow a cash crop, and then you have to pay a foreign marketplace to actually price that cash crop for you. And so having a producer leaning or consumer leaning marketplace, if you have a producer group or consumer group that's very powerful within the space, but not currently set to move forward. Is potentially interesting. And that too, that's where other sub-associations could also exist. So you might have a group of people that all have a common supply interest that might be able to create a marketplace in order to unify their entire supply chain and allow them to not necessarily outsource, but take advantage of scale that individual businesses wouldn't be able to get, and sort of crowdsource an advantage in pricing and so on. So there are possibilities there. I have not encountered people interested in that so far, but that there's a lot of potential applications for this technology.
So, excuse me, if I understand correctly, you're providing technology and consulting services to these operators. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and is how big a pool is the operator pool? Are there a bunch of them, or is it a pretty small community?
It's a fairly small community. Like I said, the three most important markets on Earth are in London, Chicago, and New York. And it's not a pool of operators there. It's a couple of companies in each location, are pretty much it. Now, they are large companies, and each market is effectively its own separate entity. So, if lumber goes up or down, that doesn't necessarily mean anything for the price of milk, because those two things are different commodities and they can move independently of one another.
Right.
So from that perspective, there are a fair number of experts, but there it is a pretty limited pool of folks. I've got three people in pursuit, and I've got a pool of about three interested people thinking about it right now.
So in pursuit, you're pursuing them, or they're pursuing you?
They're integrating the technology into their offerings and
Oh.
trying to launch.
Okay. All right. So you're working with some of them that are going to use the tool in their business, or working on finding a way to use the tool in their business, and then
Yes.
okay. So so how did they find you, or how did you find them?
more or less conversations like this one. I started my networking journey just in my local town, which is a very small place, but is a university town, so it's not that difficult to find people to have intellectual discussions with. And that was sort of the first road of chipping from my expertise, which is mathematics and algorithms, into a more generally focused communication. I shifted primarily from there to LinkedIn networking, in order to push out more and more. I had gone to a convention a few years ago and was set to sort of move up the chain there, but then COVID happened,
Oh, yeah.
and so shifted even more to online, but kind of everybody else was shifting to online at the same time. So over the last couple of years, I've had a real explosion of opportunity in that online space. And so now I have started guesting on podcasts in an effort to even further broaden the message and get the word out there.
Yeah, good, good. Have you ever thought of doing your own podcast and inviting potential customers to be guests?
That's very recently something that started to happen. I did want to get into this and kind of see how much I could produce this way before I got into that. Also, I'm very cheered that other people find me interesting, but I find me very boring because I already know all the things I'm talking about, so
Well,
it's
I
not
mean, you were very good at putting the description of what the benefits are, basically how it operates and what the benefits are to both sides of the equation in real world. So you made it simple enough for a dummy like me to understand. So that's good.
Well, yes, thank you very much. And I find those sorts of moments very encouraging. But the notion of sort of signing myself up for weekly discussions is something that I'm not quite ready to push over the edge yet.
Yeah, understood. Understood. I see that you are thinking about writing a book. If you did do that, what would the purpose be? Would it be a legacy book to kind of leave your knowledge and experience behind, or would it be a lead generation book like a business card on steroids, as one of my guests said one time?
Yeah, I think a bit more of that, and that's also part of what's going on. I have pretty nasty dyslexia, which happily has never impaired my reading ability, but I find that almost any presentation of the written material just shuts my brain off, and so I've developed over the decades a reasonable conversational style. And so taking advantage of the podcasting format to create permanent records, and then trying to get enough content together to see what kind of integrations and missing pieces could exist. I've worked with other writers on this a few times, and there've been some good pieces of media that have been produced, but the kind of full scope of this is quite large, and there's a lot that's inside my head that's difficult to get out
Right.
in terms that are broadly understandable. And so this kind of format with having conversations with multiple people allows a natural flow of this material, and is a lot easier for me than sitting down and writing because my brain would rebel.
Okay, got it. So, have you got any projections or goals, whatever you want to call them, say for the next 12 months that you'd like to achieve for your business, either client-wise or revenue-wise?
The leading contender right now would like to start operation of one of these markets, actually for an index, by the end of this year, and that's an enormous seed to plant. If I could get another couple clients, on the road to starting up between now and then, that would be another enormous win. But really, I sort of grind forward and take what comes as it comes. I'm not much of one for planning for the future. I just try to find a path to walk that looks like it's heading where I'd like to get to.
Okay, well, good. One of the things that you need to keep a business going is capital. So are you doing okay? And if I'm asking out of school, just tell me. But are you making the money you need to keep going and do whatever you need to do to expand on the technology and market for business and taking care of yourself?
To date, I'm doing okay. I've had a day job for a little while, and one of the nice things about being an expert in algorithms and data analysis is that it's relatively easy to find fairly high-paying jobs. And when you link that with my preferred lifestyle, that means that I can pile up personal reserves fairly easily. It does and did detract somewhat from my ability to move forward, but since the path that I'm on is essentially just a personal networking thing, that there aren't many costs associated with it. Even a single minor success has a reasonable payoff expectation of more or less lifetime retirement.
Oh,
And
wow.
the full scale of this is truly mind-boggling. America's commodity exchange rate alone is roughly $5 trillion a year. And that number is quite old, and there's been a lot of inflation since then. So it may well be six by now. And the overhead costs that are associated with that exchange are, according to U.S. government figures, 16%. So
Wow.
the market size disruption is, depending on how you want to count it, either trillions or hundreds of billions of dollars in size. And 0.01% of $100 billion is $10 million. So kind of any nibble is vastly more than my lifestyle would require for 1,000 lifetimes. So in those terms, I'm still doing okay for a couple of years, and if I've got to dip out and sort of half time it so that I can keep food on the table, that's probably going to work out okay too.
No, good. Interesting. You used the word nibble. I was just going to say that size of a pond is a good one to fish in, and you don't need to catch much to make it worthwhile.
No. It's really quite extraordinary, some of these numbers. Rice is the biggest agricultural commodity on Earth, and that's a roughly $300 billion a year industry. Wheat is number two. That's around a quarter of $1 billion,
Oh,
and both of those are moving up fast with inflation. Oil is about $1 trillion a year business. So there's some really amazingly large systems that are being engaged on technology that's more than 500 years old.
yeah, interesting. Well, this has been extremely interesting to me. And I'm sure it will be to our listeners as well. Do you have any final thoughts, or if any of your ideal clients are out there listening, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, I'll open the net, even if you're not an ideal client, if you'd like to learn more about how the economy could work, and how it might work for you. You can reach me at noahphealy@yahoo.com. I have a website at CORDISC, that's CORDISC.com. Or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm the Noah Healy that's on LinkedIn. I'm the Noah Healy that's on a lot of places. I'm, according to Google, the oldest Noah Healy that's alive.
Interesting. Well, that's something that I don't know if you put that on a business card, but it's something that you can mention. Well, thanks, Noah. I appreciate all the great information you gave us. And that's a wrap on another great guest episode for the Evolvepreneur Secrets for Entrepreneurs show. And just before you go, if you'd like this episode, we would be very grateful if you'd give us a little 5-star review. And if you'd be so kind, please consider recommending the show to a friend or two. And make sure to subscribe for future episodes at evolvepreneursecrets.show. And until the next time, and if you're an entrepreneur, make a start on your next great idea today. Thanks very much for listening.